Welcome to the podcast, Winning Through Culture, where we're helping entrepreneurs stay impactful and relevant. I'm your host, Tim Flanagan.
I am excited today to be with Centario Greer and Jabbar Jamieson, the founders of J&G Legacy Financial Group, LLC. Centario and Jabbar are very passionate about serving the Black community and serving to bring financial security to this community. They've also been very intent on building a team around their respective strengths. So today, we're not only going to have them tell their story and share a little bit about their journey, but we're going to spend some time really delving into why the work they do is so important to the Black community and what their mission and focus is to better serve the Black community, bringing financial security to the Black community, as well as ultimately helping close the wealth gap. So Centario, Jabbar, welcome. So I always like to start with getting you an opportunity to tell your story and share a little bit about your journey. So I know you guys meet with clients all the time, so you're used to kind of ham and egging it, and I'll let you decide who wants to start that. But I'd love to, again, just dive into the story of how you guys came to form J&G Legacy. Then we'll take it from there into the why and the focus of your mission.
Thanks again, Tim, and really appreciate the opportunity just to talk more about J&G and just discuss the Black community overall and from a wealth perspective where we stand. I think starting there is really where J&G starts. Centario and I, we met 3 years ago now, mm-hmm. and most advisors in this space are individual practices. I knew coming in from my corporate career of 17 plus years, I did not want that. There's strength in numbers, but also too, there's the ability to reach out and scale a business more efficiently, if you will, by forming a team. So from that standpoint, you want to make sure that you mesh with your partner or partners. And from the very first several meetings that Centario and I had, were fortunate to go on, the client interaction, the back and forth, it was really engaging, it flowed well. But even better than that, the client received it well. And so having someone with a like energy, having someone with a focus on the Black community to partner with, it makes our job easier to convey the message of who we are to a client for them to receive that. So in a nutshell, again, just 3 years ago, being like-minded, like mission, mm-hmm. We have formed a partnership that I think has done pretty well,
yeah.
and continues to grow. And we're just glad that people have received it well also.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it's one of those things where even though we're like-minded and like-missioned, we still think a little differently in some cases. And it makes it perfect because we bounce off one another, right? His strengths are my weaknesses. My strengths are his weaknesses. And it just flows. And it was so natural. It was probably the most natural thing ever because I had done joint business with other advisors, but it just clicked. So everything happens for a reason.
Sure does. And that is a special thing when something clicks like that. And I think the reason that it's clicked, you both have a very similar passion for serving the Black community. And, you know, as you came together to form this partnership, which has really emerged into a team, what were some of your, table stakes, the things that were really important to you from a focus and a mission perspective as far as what you wanted to accomplish as financial advisors working together?
Well, I do think, you know, we obviously wanted to create an environment where our community felt comfortable and they could trust us, right? Trust is a major, major thing. And distrust, I feel like, keeps people from seeking advice on how to build wealth. So we wanted to be a trusted resource. We also wanted to present a good look, right? We wanted to look the part. We wanted to have people that are knowledgeable, the correct licenses, all that kind of stuff in place. And our backgrounds are a perfect match, too. So we didn't want to just focus on one type of investment advice, whether it's just insurance or just investments. We wanted to be comprehensive. And when you put us two together, that's really what was created. So definitely it's just, you know, we wanted to look the part. We wanted to be the part, and we wanted to create an environment where people could trust us. In the community, they have not let us down. You know, when you give, the community gives right back.
That's fantastic. I know that's, again, the passion you both share. I mean, Jabbar, you and I have talked a lot about this. You know, what progress have you seen in the work you guys have done together to serve the Black community?
I think it comes from the education aspect and connecting with clients and helping them understand our why, but bringing out their why as well. Our why is to really make people understand what wealth is. And we start there from educating them about net worth and why that's important, why that's relevant. From there, things start to click, right? So you see it in the first meeting. I never thought about that. You hear that a lot. And there's an understanding that's established right from the beginning. I think that's very important. Building upon that, they get more comfortable with the resources we provide. Now that you know what wealth truly is, we can position things to you that make sense. Not in the terms of, I'm a salesperson and I want to get you into a product or a solution, but from the standpoint of, this is who I am as a person, this is where I'm starting, and now these are the tools that I want to use to build that wealth. That's an important story because people can hang on to that. I can't hang on to the fact that I'm getting a 7% return and someone else is getting 14%, right? There's a difference and a disconnect. I can hang on to the fact that my wealth has increased 7% and now I understand why it's increased and how can I continue that path. And when you look at it, that's what you really want people to focus on, is the fact that they're getting wealthier over time, which means now there's an understanding that could be transitioned to the next generation from a legacy perspective too. So, you can't put a price tag on the education that's provided. And Centario hit on it earlier too. Even though there's a real specific accounting equation for wealth, right? Assets minus liabilities equals net worth. Mm-hmm. Our aspect of what wealth is communication plus trust equals net worth. Mm-hmm. That skill, those resources, that ability to connect to a community builds your ability to gain equity, gain value in the community. We believe it's been missing, and that's what we're really bringing to the table from a very peace of mind standpoint. Mm-hmm.
So really that focus on trust as the starting point leads to authentic relationships, and you guys have really put a lot of emphasis on education and awareness. You know, really taking the time up front in a relationship to educate on what wealth is, why wealth's important, and how to build wealth, and then help people from a mindset and understanding perspective put that in the context of what they want in their greater life. You know, you touched on something that I think is very important, Jabbar, and I'll let either one of you take this, but, you know, wealth is beyond just money. It's not just how much is in your bank account. It's, you know, in many respects, it's different to different people, recognize that. But expound a little bit on the definition of what you're trying to bring to your clients beyond the monetary side of things.
Specifically talking about the Black community, there's a lot of, I think wealth has to be generational, right? I think you have to define it as generational. So to your point, it can't just be money in the bank. It has to be more than that. It has to also be good money habits. And it also has to be breaking bad money habits. I believe that there's a mindset shift that we are doing our best to push and getting folks to understand, you know, how to truly value yourself, how to value your time and your efforts. All of those things accumulate over time, and the decisions that you make in your 20s, 30s, and 40s make a difference. But even bigger, the decisions you make in your 50s, 60s, 70s, and how that impacts your children and grandchildren make a huge difference. And I think there's been a divide in our generations where, you know, you'll hear, okay, well, you know, I raised my children, I put them through college, so I've done my part. But there's a bigger race that we're trying to run. And so there has to be a connection between, okay, the baby boomers or the older generation saying, how do we make sure that we're passing down good money habits along with resources, right? Along with capital, because this is capitalism. How do we pass down capital and the right mindset and the right habits and the right, I guess you can, I don't want to call them visions, but what do you want your family's name to mean 50 years from now? So just having those conversations and sitting down the grandparent with their child and grandchildren and talking about it as a family. We've had those conversations, and I think that's a different approach than what most people would expect when they talk to an advisor. But you got to attach the why to the decisions that they make now. That's when people buy in. That's when they get it, and that's when they commit.
And to follow up on that, one of the most rewarding things you hear, maybe not an initial meeting, but usually sometimes an initial meeting, is the fact that there's a comfort that's transitioned into to who they are and how they handle money. There's a lot of anxiety around money, and rightfully so. I mean, we work every day for it. Capitalism, we're surrounded by it. That's what drives our economy. And unfortunately, just based on statistics, right, whether we're talking about $1.1 trillion of student loan debt, whether we're talking about the $1 trillion plus dollars of credit card debt, people don't know how to use money. So when you can actually give it to them in a way that they can digest, and they have this look and this appreciation, and they tell you and their shoulders drop a little bit, that peace of mind goes far and beyond. And how do they communicate that? One, in a follow-up meeting, is usually, I'm doing so much better, I feel better about the position I'm in. But then two, I need to introduce you to such and such. Like, the information you gave me, it needs to be heard. That's the highest compliment from a standpoint of when you're talking not only the currency of money, but the currency of, again, just trust and communication. Now we've gained your trust, and now you're communicating with us that you want to take that trust and pass it on to someone that you care about. The ultimate compliment, and again, that's how things happen. That's how movements start. Mm-hmm. Is through that energy that this is good, it feels good, it's for the right reasons, how can we get more of it? So that's the feeling that we love more, just hearing our clients and the ease and the peace of mind that brings from going through our process.
And really helping them get, you know, what we call financial peace of mind, but really come to an awareness that in spite of what they may have thought previously, there really is an opportunity for them to do some things, step into a space where they feel more in control of their financial future. One of the things that I know is important to you, and Centario, you touched on this, you know, I'll say legacy and intergenerational wealth transfer. How do you see that as an important part in creating opportunities in the Black community?
Great question. And I think, I'm not going to say it's the ultimate question, but I think it's a very important, if we're talking about closing the racial wealth gap, it has to start there, right? So, you know, let's use the baby boomers, for example. They might be, and you know, we don't know what the future holds, but they might be the last generation to have a pension, a 401k, and Social Security. Okay, so if they're the last generation that'll have that, if we don't maximize that, and if we don't recognize the opportunity, then we're missing the whole boat, right? We can't afford to not maximize it, is what I tell folks all the time. You know, if there's a way to still maintain and have a quality retirement for yourself, but leave your children and grandchildren something, why not? That's the question I always ask. So, you know, it's a different conversation than what most people in our community have had, because a lot of times we're starting from scratch every generation. But to answer your question, I think we got to start there. And then I think it's important to highlight that, you know, it might take a generation or two, but you've got to buy into that. And maybe giving them examples, you know, families and people of wealth, they didn't get it the first generation. It might have taken the grandfather to the father to the son, or grandmother to the you know, mother to the daughter.
I think that legacy piece, Tim, to your point, is just key. It does us no good if after Centauri and I leave, there's nothing to reflect J&G. A lot of businesses and a lot of successful businesses in our community are one generational businesses. There's no succession planning in it. And from a family togetherness standpoint, it's the same thing. When that pillar, that patriarch, that matriarch passes away, where's the continuity at? So you look at legacy and you start to understand what legacy is. You start to understand the negative aspect of what can impact legacy. And you say, hey, what can we do from our positions to make sure that doesn't happen? And creating that dialogue between generations, making them understand why it's important to plan on a more collective as opposed to an individual basis, having that more community feel allows people to say, ah, now we're starting to connect the dots. Now we're getting somewhere. Now we are preparing the next generation to prepare to receive what we've established. We know it's not going to be wasted, right? Communicating that in an effective way, because quite honestly, some of the anxiety is that the next generation is not ready to receive what we have. Mm-hmm. So why would we allow them to waste what we've had? And that's just the wrong mindset to have. So you create a dialogue between generations and you can see the benefit, the tangible benefit, but also too the intangible benefit, right? It just makes the family unit more, that much more cohesive. And it makes just, again, the generation and the legacy and the family tree that much more known and understood of why it's important to do what we do. Communicate what's important, what we need to communicate. And not only from a social and just spiritual and community collective, but now we have the economy to support all that as well. And again, that just creates a better story and a dialogue that now there's a dependency that we can create and we can see.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting things from my vantage point about legacy, which is, you know, the name of your firm, is legacy is actually created now. It's reflected in the future, but it's created now. And I think that's the work that you're doing, is trying to help people recognize that it's the decisions of today that will reflect, you know, the legacy in the future of whether it's a family or a business, you know, that's today's actions matter. And that's, I think, something you guys certainly are passionate about, to say the least. So we had an opportunity earlier this year to virtually attend the American Colleges Conference for African American Financial Professionals. And we were socially distanced that day in a large room where we watched the video stream of that. And I know for me, I've been doing a lot of reflection and education this year in 2020 to learn better about race from, you know, a 54-year-old white guy's perspective in the world that I was raised in, and the lens through what I was taught to look at the world through. One of the statistics, though, that really smacked me in the face during that conference was the disparity of wealth in this country between a black community and really Caucasian and even other Asian, other ethnic communities in America. What do you guys see as the simple, and maybe not, that's probably not the right word, but to bring it to a place of actionable, you know, there's not an easy answer, I guess, or a simple answer, but maybe the steps that could be taken to begin to close that gap?
Well, I think the first steps is the understanding that there is a gap and why that's important, yeah. Right? Once you understand why that gap persists, and I'm glad you stated from a 54-year-old Caucasian perspective, our history in America is not known or widely studied. Yep. You look at something like Black Wall Street, and that's new to a lot of people, what happened in Oklahoma all those years ago, right?
It was new to me this year.
And that's an example of wealth being taken away, mm-hmm. and not replaced, right? The destruction that happened, not only just from a very human standpoint, life taken away, but the economy that was taken away as well. You look at the Freedman Bank during Reconstruction and how $1 billion worth of wealth today was taken away through the mismanagement of banking institution created for blacks, right? All of these things, one, makes our job a little harder, right? Because now we're playing from a deficit and we have to reestablish a rapport in institutions, right? Because there's this distrust of institutions. But then two, what are we working with? If each generation we've seen a destruction of economy, at that standpoint, we're starting from a deficit. If you understand that you're starting from way behind, you start to think a little bit differently. And one of the ways we thought differently, which is the core of what we do, is the insurance aspect. There's no better way to leverage it from a community perspective and close that gap than looking at what life insurance does and what life insurance is. And I'm not even talking from a product standpoint, I'm just talking about the money that flows back in the community standpoint. If I give somebody $1, what are you gonna do with this $1 to potentially leverage $10 into the community? You could start a business, that's one way, a successful business, right?
Yep.
You can look at life insurance as a second way. And we can go down a list of different ways, but the life insurance is just easy pickings to the fact that now, okay, one, you put value on my life. That's important. I can see the value and wealth in my life now. But then two, now we have this asset to pass to the next generation. Now there's a burden on us to make sure they're ready to receive that, because now we have something to give. So again, it's just understanding, one, where we're coming from, what's been taken away. But now that there's an opportunity to build legacies, what can we use to really impact people in a very short period of time to close what is a big gap? The median net worth of African-American families, $11,000, right?
Yep.
The median net worth of a Caucasian family is about
$180,000.
That's a big gap. If you look at the averages, it's even worse, right?
Yeah.
The median takes away some of the skewedness of the extremities. And so with that being stated, who we are as a company, it has to start with that. If we're serious about the legacy in our name, the legacy we're trying to create, we see it wholeheartedly as insurance playing a role into that. And so again, that's a little bit of the education, not only from a solution standpoint, but also from a historic standpoint of where we started from and where we need to go.
And I think, so, Dr. Pamela Jolly said this that same day with the American College. She said, you know, as black advisors working with the black community, it's twofold. We have to approach this from our head and our heart, which is, it's a very tough task to do, because most, you know, money, you know, is a tangible thing, right? It's a logical thing, but we have to approach it from both logic and emotion, mm-hmm. because money is emotional for our people, because it's something we've never had. So because our experience is unique in this country, we're tasked to approach the conversation differently, right, is my point. I think there needs to be a sense of pride. This is why life insurance is so important. If we understand and we're prideful about who we are, we're prideful about certain things in our culture, we're prideful about sports, prideful about music and entertainment, acting, all that, which is amazing. But let's start being more prideful about business ownership. Let's be more prideful about home ownership. Let's be more prideful about inheritance dollars. If we made that the standard, I think then it would force you to now look in the mirror to say, okay, if all of my friends and family or the people in my circle feel like they are million-dollar assets and they're starting to purchase large insurance policies for themselves and their families, they're starting to buy more real estate, they're starting to open business, it forces you to now join into that movement. Everything we've ever done that was successful, it was a movement. So I do believe just taking pride in who we are, understanding what our worth and our wealth is, and once you understand that, now protect that wealth and that worth. And I think, again, it's insurance, I think it's real estate, and I think it's businesses. I think those are simple things for people to understand. And again, it won't happen overnight, but if that became the standard versus, you know, I graduated from college, you know, and that's it, right? I think the standard has to change, and then everything else will take care of itself. Then you'll start to see proof, because there hadn't really been proof yet. We hadn't seen someone inherit $1 million. We haven't seen someone inherit a business. We hadn't seen it, but it'll happen. And once it begins to happen more frequently, the standard changes. And then once the mind expands, it'll no longer contract. So it'll take time, but, you know, it's a fight we're willing to fight. And there's a lot of people fighting it with us, a lot of people.
Yeah, you know, as I was listening to you, what struck me, because we were talking about the American College, you know, Solomon Huebner, who was a professor in the 20s, I believe, at the American College, was the founder of the concept of human life value. Mm-hmm. And the whole concept, it's kind of become a lost art in the financial services profession here in 2020. The whole concept was, you know, that there was a economic value to a human's life, which is the premise for most attorneys that, you know, sue for wrongful death. Exactly. And a lot of people don't understand that concept. A lot of people don't appreciate it. But I know when I learned it early in my career many years ago, it really wasn't about putting an economic price tag on our head as much as helping a client understand that the value, the economic value of your lifetime of work does have significantly greater value to it than most people think about. You know, they think about they earn X amount of dollars in a year and they spend Y. But if you look at it over a lifetime of what a person can create, it really is it can be a remarkably large number. Which is, you know, again, why in a lot of litigation, when there's a wrongful death or wrongful injury, you'll see some pretty significant awards given because it's tied to some factor of what that person's contribution would have been economically to their family and, in the case of a business, to their business. So it is a, you know, that is a lens that serves everyone well to begin to think about, you know, what am I capable of and what can that value be? You know, I definitely kind of going back to that wealth gap piece, just I want to acknowledge that there are steps that can be taken, but it's not a, you know, something that just happens overnight. And I definitely acknowledge the work that you guys are doing to make a contribution and to make a change and make a difference in that regard. And Centauri, you said it is a movement. I personally would like to think in 2020, for as crazy as this year has been, there'll be some good things that come out of it. And I think there may be a movement, at least from my vantage point, in this country, of recognizing the reality of Black Americans, recognizing the space that too often does not get acknowledged as to the history and the lack of awareness of history. And, you know, this economic gap is real, and that there can be a greater focus and a movement on closing that gap and doing it in a substantive way that helps everyone build a lot of the skill sets, habits, and mindsets you guys have talked about.
Yeah, and to that point, the good things that'll come out of 2020, one is there has been a significant increase in Blacks frequenting Black businesses. I think Business Insider says something like 7,000% increase at the start of the pandemic, right? So what does that mean? There's a book about 5 years ago that said that right now about 3% of business is done between the African-American community, Black community, 3%. If that number increases to 10%, it could create 1 million jobs. That's the opportunity that's driven and the good and the silver lining that's come out of 2020, right? You see people, unfortunately, losing jobs, but what does that do? That inspires you to say, hey, maybe I don't want to rely on my W-2 wages anymore. Maybe I want to be an entrepreneur. How can I position myself to do that, take advantage of this? How can we support one another? if you start to see that happening, the fact that these businesses start to do well, they start to formulate and need the resources around them, it permeates throughout the community. So we can increase the amount of business that just African-Americans and Blacks do amongst ourselves. It doesn't seem a lot. From 3% to 10%, and that creates a million jobs.
A lot of leverage.
Exactly. So we have to get the mindset that, again, it's good to take the risk. We're excited about taking the risk, but the impact of taking that risk far outweighs the impact of not doing anything. And again, I've worked in corporate America. I'm grateful for all the training and the pay training, right, that I received from the institutions that I've worked with. But at the same time, from an impact perspective, if I can't go create another opportunity for someone else, then at that time it minimizes, from my standpoint, and this is just Jabbar talking about Jabbar, my ability to be a resource to the overall community. So taking the risk where you see the fact that if not me, then who? Acting on that risk, but then also too, just helping other people put that foot in front of themselves and take the risk too. Again, it starts to spread and they see your success and through blood, sweat, and tears, right? Yep. Crying, kicking, fighting, screaming, high-fiving, all that stuff that we do as advisors, it allows us to tell a story and just encourage another person just to do the same. So that's a hallmark of our practice. And Tara and I, two-man team, started. Hired an office manager, Takesha, does great work. She's great for the glue of our team, but now we're helping other advisors come into the business as well. We're expanding our practice because of our success, because of our community seeing our success and investing in us by investing in themselves. That's where it starts. Now we have a team of five, right? Yep. Two additional advisors and Jonathan and Lakeisha. Mm-hmm. They're doing well and it starts to multiply. So shame on us for not wanting to one partner with one another, but then two, not realizing our talent and helping someone else take that step. And then it goes even a little bit further to other clients that we have who are business owners and making sure their business has the resources necessary, and information is a resource too, that makes them even more successful to hire more people. We can impact that 3 to 10%. We can impact what wealth is and increasing it from 11,000 to 15,000. It's a start, right? In the right direction. Right. Long as we're doing what we need to do and having the energy. So yes, 2020 has, if nothing else, seen a silver lining of us doing business more collectively, but giving us the energy that we need and motivation to succeed, right? It's heightened in times like this.
Yeah, and the book you're talking about is Our Black Year by Maggie Anderson. Her and her husband, John, they for an entire year, they only bought from Black-owned businesses, which it brings up another point. So we've talked about generational wealth. We've talked about our elders, you know, trusting the younger generations and us buying into it. There has to be, selfishness can exist in the equation. And it's human nature to be selfish, right? But we've got to figure out a way to collectively get rid of that and understand that if we don't get rid of it, if we don't fix it, it will get bad a lot faster than we think. I believe this statistic you talk about all the time, Jabbar, is we're 30 years away from having a net worth of zero.
Yeah, 33
years from having a net worth of zero. So that means we're trending in the wrong direction. So even though we may have certain celebrities and folks that yes, okay, we have icons that we can look up to as a community, we're actually going backwards. And then it forces you to say, okay, well, other communities have come to America and done fine. Their net worth is improving, but ours is going backwards. And it's almost like it's the fourth quarter, right? We cannot play around anymore. We have to have the perfect drive, right? We need everyone to block. We need everybody to catch, everybody to throw. We need everybody to do their part. And there's so many people that are in this fight with us and that are walking, you know what they say, you got to walk the talk. There's so many people doing that, just like yourself, Tim. So I think the excuses have to go away now. It's just you know, getting behind it, putting action behind it, not being selfish, buying into a larger movement and understanding you might not reap all the benefits from it, but you've got to have a belief and trust that your children or grandchildren will, because if you don't, it's not going to be pretty for them at all. Yeah. And that scares me enough to make sure my future grandchildren have what they need, because I can't think of a scenario where my last name doesn't mean anything anymore. I can't. Yeah. That's enough to drive me. So,
makes sense. No, it does make sense. And, you know, I've shared this with you guys. I mean, I'm very much inspired by both of you and the work you're doing and the team you have. And, you know, it's clear that through your efforts, you know, we can't always fix everything or change everything. We can just do what we do every day. And I think the collective value of your efforts every day and your passion and your focus on this mission are hard to measure today, but you just know they're headed in a direction that will change the lives of the people that you at least come in touch with. And by doing what you're doing, I know you're inspiring other people to step into the space. So I definitely appreciate you guys and your leadership. Certainly am inspired by it and am honored to be a part of the journey and to be supporting your practice and looking forward to continuing to do that in an effort to really see substantive change, at least here in our local community in the Carolinas, in the Black community, because I know you guys are doing the things that are going to lead your clients or prospective clients down a path of greater financial security. And that's, you know, that's ultimately, to your point, Centario, I mean, it takes action. You know, you said there's the head, there's the heart. And I always say there's the head, there's the heart, and there's the feet. And, you know, the head gets it. The heart's got to want it and love it, you know, love someone else. I think so much of what we do, you know, I know I do, you know, from a financial perspective, is love of my children and my wife and the causes and the people that are important to me. And that drives a lot of my financial decisions is to in essence, protect those that I love. But it's your feet, you know, that's the action. So it's great to know it. It's another thing to feel it. It's the third act is to get into action. And you know, I one of the things that as we bring new advisors into the business, I always tell them the story of when I started at 22, I had a negative net worth. And my mentor at the time told me I should put together a little analysis of my situation, which was basically a net worth statement. And I had pretty much no assets. And I had a lot of debt, so I had a negative net worth. And it was kind of painful to look at, quite frankly. But a habit I got in that later mentors taught me is it's not how much you make, it's how much you keep. And, you know, they said focus on increasing your net worth. Well, when you start where I was starting, you have to get rid of the debt before you can really add too much to the asset side. So I've kept all of those different analyses I've did every couple of years over the years, just as a reminder. But, you know, you guys are doing great work, giving people the path to financial security and prosperity. And just, again, really honored to support you. So anything kind of as a closing comment for today or final thoughts?
Well, I'll say this and then I'll let Jabbar close us out.
Yeah. See, I appreciate that. Oh yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm the closer.
No, I definitely wanted to say thank you. Thank you for creating the platform. Thank you for your sincere and genuine care about our community, about our country, right? Thanks for your leadership. And I would just tell the folks that are listening, you know, positive change is happening every day. We see it, you know, we get the phone calls where people are like, hey, I inherited some land. I inherited a couple of houses. I inherited money. is starting to happen now. It took a while, but we've got to understand the first black advisor wasn't hired by a large company like this until 1957.
Yeah.
You take a Mass Mutual, we've been around for 1851, I believe.
1851.
Right? So it was 100 plus years before there was one of us in this business to start educating the rest of us. And you fast forward, you know, 1957 to now, that's only, what, 73 years? Am I doing my math? 63 years, right? So the change is coming. The proof that it's possible, it's coming. We just got to stay consistent, stay diligent, and just believe in something bigger than ourselves. And just, you know, don't try to conquer the world all in one day. Just change one habit, right? Just do one thing differently. Just do one thing and then tell someone else about it. Start having these conversations and, I just think it'll get better. So I just want to make sure people have a sense of hope and because the narrative, the narrative is so bad, it's so bad. Well, yes, but there are signs of improvement. Mm-hmm. They just aren't celebrated and talked about enough. So one of the things we try to do is highlight and spotlight a client every month that is doing amazing things, that might have a 9-to-5, but they also have real estate. They've also invested and been a silent partner in other businesses. We try to highlight those people just to show these are everyday people and it's possible. So that's my last, two cents. And I guess I'm going to pass it to, I refuse to call him the closer.
Well, you just did. Say, pass it to Jabbar.
Well, I've scored 40. I'll let him score his last two. How about that?
Well, I appreciate it. And that's, I mean, really strong words. I'm going to continue on the analogy that Tim put forth with the feet, right? You can get to where you're going walking barefoot, or you can have a nice pair of Nikes, or you can just, sandals, whatever, the means and mode to get there, right? So with that being stated, we have to not only do the work, but we have to be comfortable with reinventing ourselves and using the tools around us. Mm-hmm. Tim, you have done a phenomenal job from an agency standpoint of creating an environment pre-COVID to really be able to handle and tackle the things that this COVID-19 has created. An environment where we're not collectively coming together anymore. Right, and that's important. Mm-hmm. I think the ability to just be in the game and saying I'm walking to a destination and this is how I want to get there, having the resources and tools around you makes a big difference. I never thought coming into this environment, one, I didn't know the success rate was only 10% of advisors are successful or make it in this business after 3 years. That's scary to go into a position like that, right? So you want to surround yourself with the resources and the people who are going to help you not only make it beyond that 10%, but just, again, have something to pass down. Mm-hmm. So this environment that you have fostered, you have put, I hope I don't violate anything by saying this, Nikes on our feet and making our journey to put our feet forward to get to a destination just that much more comfortable, because the work is hard. Centauri and I joke, we quit about 3 times a day, right?
Yeah.
I lost count in my early years.
Yeah.
I tell people.
Yes.
So with that, I mean, even though we've been blessed with a level of success, it's through the hard work, but it's through reinventing yourself and being in the game. I never thought I would be able to have a practice that I could be remote talking to clients. Mm-hmm. Well, really, right now, to operate, that's the only way you can.
Yeah.
And so if you look at it from a standpoint of just putting our foot forward and taking a risk and getting into it, sometimes you just have to get into it and understand it. It doesn't have to be solved all in the first day. Mm-hmm. But now that you're into it, you have to learn to adjust and adapt. I think if nothing else from the black community standpoint, we are a resilient people. We have learned to adjust and adapt in a way that, again, I'm in awe from being an ancestor of that.
Yeah.
And so with that being stated, from J&G legacy standpoint, Jabbar Jameson and his family standpoint, being put into the game and placed into the game, being held as a steward of people's resources coming to you, it's just a level of appreciation that we now have a practice, and not just, I don't think we appreciate what we've created enough. And just taking the time out to just really, one, appreciate it, but then two, doing the work necessary to kind of project and grow. And just being grateful for that our God has given us the opportunity to be here, play here, have a passion here, to help people travel and traverse in some Nikes to the next level. And so thank you for, again, just an environment that allows us to not have to displace all the worry, but it makes what we do, which is a hard job, all that much easier, because we have the people and the tools around us to really support our community in a way that, again, is just appreciated. So I'll end with that.
Well, thank you.
Yes, and one last thing. So he missed, so I'm going to get the layup.
Sure.
And get, yeah, so
put
I'm going to close.
Put
yeah,
back.
I'm
going to get back. I missed
yeah.
a shot.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah, I'm
going to
give
a
look. No, seriously, I really want to just salute all the other folks in our business that look like us that are fighting the same fight. Yeah. It's a tough thing, but I tell you, been in the business 10 years now, I've just met some amazing people, and I just, you know, just want to show them love, want to give them encouragement, you know, just keep doing what you're doing. All the little foot soldiers that people might not know about, we sacrifice more than what people know. So just want to acknowledge all our colleagues, I consider them family. Love y'all, and keep grinding. We all we got, we all we need.
I love it. That's so thank you for the comments, but I love that. You know, I was thinking as we were, we'll finish on the feet analogy. You know, there's an old saying, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together.
There you go.
So, you know, I think the ability to go far together is what's exciting to me. And I think, you know, that this year is the beginning of some real positive change. I know it won't be easy, but we're moving in the right direction. So really appreciate the time with both you guys today. Thank you, Centario. Thank you, Jabbar. And appreciate you being on our podcast, Winning Through Culture. And look forward to continuing to invest in seeing you succeed. So thank you.
Thank
you. I've enjoyed spending time with you on this episode today, and be sure to continue along this winning journey with me. Thank you for listening to the Winning Through Culture podcast, and remember, stay impactful and relevant. To connect with us, you can find us on Instagram and LinkedIn at Winning Through Culture, and find us online at winningthroughculture.com, or just go to the show notes where you'll find all the links. We look forward to connecting with you and hearing from you. Thanks for listening.